The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Testing.
Testies.
Testies.
1, 2, 3.
Boner.
I don't know shit about fuck.
Fucker.
I like sucking, but I ain't gay.
Legit bad podcast.
Fuck those honkies.
Oh yeah.
Kick ass.
Welcome to Costco. I love you.
He really knows how to suck a wiener.
Welcome back to Legit Bat. We have Taylor and Jeff. They've previously been on separately, and we had the pleasure of seeing them in real life in this, like, whatever you want to call real life. But we got to hang out with them for a day and go see some crystal shops and nature walks and all that.
Yeah, we went to Mount Shasta. You guys hiked Mount Shasta, or tried to.
We went there again after that, too, and actually did hike it. So,
ooh, to the top?
We did summit, yeah. We did the summit. We hiked above the summit parking lot. We did not technically summit Shasta, but we hiked up there where we couldn't get to the first time.
Yeah.
Gotcha. High enough.
That's cool.
Shit.
And then I got really sick. I just threw up everywhere, and then it was a mess.
She got some pretty serious elevation sickness.
Yeah.
I was just about to ask.
Sickness. Yeah, it was a little rough, but...
What's that?
I was wondering how your breathing was doing. Like, did you notice any difference in, like, struggling or anything like that? Or
it was hard to tell because I have asthma. So just going uphill is just like I'm always winded.
Right. Like, not being able to breathe is like every time we hike. So
yeah,
it didn't seem abnormal.
I was like, oh, this is fine. I can't breathe. I can normally not breathe. So yeah.
So yeah, that's way too far for me. I would probably die about halfway up. Zero cardio.
I noticed the sand more than I noticed the oxygen. Just hiking in sand really sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, yeah. How high is it to the summit there?
I want to say it's over 10,000.
I want to say the very top's like 14,000 or something.
I think it's something
it's like 1440.
That,
yeah.
I think the top parking lot is like just over 10,000. So where I think we were between like 10 and 11,000 feet, but I could be way off on that.
Sounds about right.
Is the top parking lot where the lodge and everything is at?
No,
where it used to be.
3,000.
Oh, okay.
Like today's ski lodge, Mount Shasta ski, that's it like 3,400, I think.
Yeah, I haven't even been up.
And then when you go up to the top of Coyote Lift, it's like 5,000.
I was going to say, I thought
it's still there.
Oh, yeah.
What's that?
Yeah, there was one that was in an avalanche, took it out, and that's where the top parking lot is.
Yeah, if you go up to the top of the lift of what they call the Coyote Lift, and you get to the top of it, the back side, which is all off limits, you go up to the top and then you go down the face, and that leads you more towards the lodge. When you're on that backside hill, you can look up and see the mountain where the old lodge used to be and the old lift. And it used to be that you could go over that side that's now off, and they had this other spot at the bottom to take you up to the top where they had another lodge. And gotcha. Yeah, that all got avalanched in, I think, before any of us were born. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it's been a while. That gets talked about a lot at the mountain in the little communities.
We found out from a drunk guy that rode the lift with us, and we just thought he was blowing smoke up our ass. He's like, I used to work here back when they had the old lodge. It avalanched. And we were like, God. And then we got back down and found out it was true. We're like, oh, that old drunk coot knew what he was talking about. Oh, shit. Ow!
Drunk doesn't always mean wrong, just most of the time.
Exactly.
It's been a while since you guys have been on, so if you want to let people know what you guys do and what how this came to be with you in the same camera frame and all that, as much or as little as you want to say.
Sure, go first.
I like how we met.
I mean,
is that what you're asking? yeah, or who I am, because I'm just a carpenter who's into weird shit. I spent most of my life burying my face in a bottle. Got sober a little over 4 years ago, and kind of started digging into all the shit that I wasn't supposed to have in my life. As a child, I was raised super, super tight-knit Christian. And so things like metaphysics and crystals and energy and frequency were all really, really frowned upon. And thinking anything other than what I got, you know, in that book was blasphemy. And so I kind of ran from spirituality as a whole as a child, and getting sober and kind of discovering who I was kind of circled back around to figuring out what spirituality was for me. And found hermeticism, found crystals and alchemy, and kind of just started to change my life one thing at a time. And that led to trying to be more open and vocal about some of the stuff that I had found in my experience and trying to share that with others, crystals being a big part of that, because I think as far as little things that you can do to start making big changes in your life, that was a good starting point for me. And I think it's something that could help a lot of people on their paths as well. But I was on a podcast and had some really weird experiences happen outside of that podcast and some energy work that I was doing. Long story, really short. I had a session with a person that I was working with, and this girl came in, not like physically, but like in session. And I couldn't see her face. I could just see like the silhouette of this woman in a dress with like this weird glowing orb that was smoking. And it was just kind of like a really bizarre thing to have happened, in session. And, the lady who was working on me basically said that like, that was my person and that she had manifested in my energetic experience. And that, you know, that's the precursor to what's going to manifest in the physical experience. So that was going to start manifesting there shortly. And I was like, yeah, all right, cool. You know, I had been single and celibate for over 3 years, and had kind of given up on finding a partner. I thought at that point that I either had to like compromise who I was and be less weird, or be single. And so I had chosen to be, you know, me and single. And then like 24 hours later, I had a message in my inbox from this chick talking about something that I had talked about on a podcast, and I got curious and went to her page, and like literally the last picture that she had posted was her in this fucking dress holding this glowing orb surrounded by a bunch of smoke. Then I was like, well, fuck me. So
like, fuck me.
Yeah, exactly. I've been celebrating for a long time.
This chick,
it's been 3 years.
And
yeah.
So like, I knew pretty quick that that was my person, but that's not something you can really say like, hey, so I saw you in this energy session and I'm pretty sure like you're the person I'm supposed to be with. You know, by the way, my name is Jeff.
I go so, by the Hatter.
Right. So kind of slow playing that and getting to know her and not, you know, sending up, what would you call that? Crazy flags or anything was kind of a touch and go.
Crazier.
It was crazy enough optically. So we kind of got to know each other over the course of the better part of a year and decided that that was what we wanted to do. And she flew out here and spent a couple weeks and then basically went home and got her shit together. I flew to Connecticut, put her shit in a box and drove her and her cat back here. And
oh damn.
No, was
here
it
we are.
Was it during that trip? That's when we went up to Mount Shasta together, wasn't it?
Yeah, that trip was the first when we first met. Yeah.
I was going to say, person. Because when, and I mentioned this to Lene the first time we talked, as I said, you know, we're having the Hatter and Taylor on. Oh, those are the people that we went and saw on Mount Shasta. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, okay. I said, well, we had Jeff on, I think it was about a year ago, because I was in between staying with my parents and staying with her. And the time that Jeff first came on was the day that we had the synchronicity of they were talking about crystals. The day that I got back from Mount Shasta buying my first crystal, and I was all, you know, kind of freaking out about it. But it was during that first podcast that we had with Jeff where him and I kind of relayed the stories of getting sober. I had just gone through a nasty divorce the year before. I had gotten sober. I was running on, I think, my first year. And yeah, he basically explained everything prior to meeting you that he just explained now. The only difference was you were not in the picture.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. That's really cool to hear.
Yeah. Well, she had some pretty weird shit happen on her end too.
Yeah. So I guess my story. So I wasn't really raised super Christian or anything, but like, you know, I went to church here and there, and then I was just like, something's not right. Yeah. Something's not right. And so about when I was like 12 or 13, I just started exploring like other religions and just different like concepts and like philosophies. So I was like, there's something out there and like none of this fits me. Like I want to find like where I fit. And so I started getting into like angels and like questioning if like fairies were real and just like getting into that whole line of questioning of like outside the box at like 12. And so I started really connecting with those kind of like woo-woo concepts. And then I had my big awakening probably around 2018 or 2019. And then I did an ayahuasca trip, and then that just, you know, blew everything to where it is now. And then I ended up doing like shadow work and spiritual energy healing, you know, as a career. And so I went from being a makeup artist and an exotic dancer to what I do now. So it's kind of like a big 180. And I used to like party a lot and drink a lot because I was always just very sensitive, and I would like see things, like I would see like ghosts and spirits and things like that. And so a way to kind of turn some of that off was just like drinking and partying. And I just wanted to find a way to like fit in because I was just fucking weird. And so, you know, I was like, I'll just like fit in and drink with everybody and party. And then, you know, that turned into a shit show. And I was a shit show for a long time. Just a hot mess of a person. And, yeah, so I'll be 1 year sober in January. So,
nice. Have we heard your ayahuasca experience?
Yes, that was the last time we
heard. Yeah, I think when you guys had me on, it was my ayahuasca story. Thinking. Yeah,
I couldn't remember for sure.
Yeah, because I heard you on Expanding Reality, and it was awesome.
That's right.
So I was like, we have to meet this chick. She seems so
cool. Yeah, and then so about a year ago, I went on my first podcast with Shadowban, and he was like, hey, and we actually knew each other from like outside. I think he went to the same school to Full Sail for audio stuff. And so he was like, hey, like, you know, I want to have more like positive people on my show because, you know, with the conspiracy aspect, like it can get kind of dark. And I really like your page. And that was when I first started off with my spiritual business. And so I went on, and he's like, hey, have you listened to the episode with Tarrant Firestride? I think you'd really dig like a lot of his concepts because you guys kind of have a similar vibe. And I was like, no, I haven't listened to it. And so I listened to it, and I like heard his voice, and it was just like this weird like recognition that I knew him from somewhere. It's like, I know him from somewhere, but I don't know him. And so I just messaged him, and I never like reach out and message people like that because like, I don't know. I mean, unless it's like just like friendly. And so I do that
all the time, but it's because we have a show. I have to.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty par for the course too, because you don't want to be a female messaging random guys on social media in today's world just willy nilly.
Yeah. And so I usually don't, but like something was like, you need to message him. And I was like, really? They're like, yep, message him. And it was like my spirit guides, or I don't know, whatever nudge you want to call it. And so I just like messaged him. And then that was what, like November, October of last year? I think it was around this time, actually.
About almost
exactly a year. And so I messaged him, and then we just never stopped talking. And you guys both had
a hell of a year.
Yeah. And so prior to that, I kind of went through a rough breakup. I was in a 5-year long relationship, and I was going through like a lot of heartbreak, and I was just asking the universe to like bring me my person. And I was doing a lot of like, I don't know if you've ever seen those like pick a card readings on YouTube where it's like those tarot readings and you pick a pile or whatever, and it gives you like a reading. And so I was doing a lot of those to kind of learn tarot more. And so I was doing a lot of like soulmate readings. So that's what was like coming up. And so all of them described like, they're like, oh, you're going to meet him. He's going to live, you know, long distance, and you're going to meet in the online space. And like all of these readings, they just like lined up, and it was like really creepy. I'm like, how could all of these be saying the same thing? And then they're like, he's going to have his own business, and like all these other like crazy like synchronicities. And literally it just described him. And I was just, so when we met, I was like, holy shit, that's fucking nuts.
when was that reading done? Was that before you ever even
it was knew before of it? Yeah, it was before I even knew of him. It was like probably a year before that.
Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Synchronicity.
It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
We decided what's by plans, go ahead.
What's that? Oh, I was gonna say what's your plans going forward with your separate businesses and all that? Are you gonna try to integrate somehow or just do your own thing?
As far as like, you know, roofing houses and shit, I'll probably do that on my own.
nonsense.
Yeah, I don't think he wants me to help. I don't think he wants my help.
We definitely have plans to do certain things together. We've got some ideas about potentially doing some retreats. And there's a lot of artsy stuff that we'd like to try to do together as far as jewelry and other stuff like that.
We'd be building a tiny house together.
We're building a tiny house together. We're hoping to be mortgage-free homeowners by the spring, which is a huge fucking learning process. We had the fine idea to save ourselves some money and buy an old camper trailer and, you know, kind of demo it to nothing and then use that as the foundation, which we saw a lot of people talking about online. Now, after buying the thing and getting really starting to get into it, we've got to learn cool things about, you know, weight restrictions on trailers and it's been a learning experience. It looks like we're gonna have to demo this thing down to the deck and then replace the axles and the tongue and then reinforce the deck and do all kinds of stuff, because right now it's rated for like 8,000 pounds,
and that includes the trailer,
and so and even like, if we use metal studs or whatever, it would be really hard to stay under that weight. We want a larger home with lofts on both ends, and I'd like to wood frame it if I could. So I think we're going to try to about double that and get closer to 15,000 as far as our weight limit, which will be, I'm going to have to learn to weld and all kinds of other stuff that I don't do. So it'll be a lot.
Yeah.
That's awesome though. Crazy. You could teach people how to do it afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
You could
just about documenting it. Yeah.
Yeah, you should. There's so many people that do that with buses and other shit online. Like you see the before of this old school bus, and afterwards it looks like nicer than my house on the inside of this bus.
Yeah.
Well, what we've noticed is nobody finishes. Like there's probably 30 different people who have gone out and like bought a trailer and demoed it and started, you know, building it, and then you never see the end of the project. And I think what's happening is they're realizing the same thing that luckily we realized before we were 2/3 of the way through the build, is that their shit's going to be too heavy for the trailer that they're trying to use.
Right.
And so I think the idea just kind of gets scrapped and they never say anything about it. So we, as far as I know, would be the only like top to bottom, front to back,
taking an old RV and making it like a tiny house.
Exactly. So we're going to try to do that. And then, you know, I'm running out of years that I can do what I did this year to my body. I'm only 33, but I started roofing houses at 13. So this is my 21st season. And I ask a lot of the meat suit. And so, this tiny home thing might be, I'm hoping it's going to be a way for us to create some income that I don't have to kill myself for. You know, tiny homes are worth anywhere between $80,000 and $140,000. So if we can build a couple of those a year, and fund finance it ourselves and, you know, do the labor in house, we do a couple of those a year and it could be pretty profitable.
Got someone at the door out there?
We can pause.
Yeah.
It's not, it's somebody else has got it. They're just being impatient. So.
Oh, okay.
Okay, no worries.
So what's the difference between a tiny house and a, like a travel trailer? Cause I mean, they both are kind of tiny houses, but I've seen the, I don't know if they're Tesla tiny houses or something. I don't remember.
No,
but
the
they're
tiny
like,
homes, they're just like a little tiny house that are, they're usually beautiful. It's like a little bungalow.
Right. And I've seen the inside of that and it does look different than a travel trailer. But so
the only difference is one is on like a foundation and one's on wheels.
Well, and I think what he's asking is like a travel trailer is usually framed with like 1x4s turned sideways. They're framed super light and it's not a house. It's a travel trailer. Whereas a tiny house is usually framed with either 2x3 or 2x4 studs and it's built like a house, right?
So square footage wise, it's small.
It's small. Yeah. And so the one that we're building is going to be 28 feet long. we can build it 8.5 feet wide and we can build it 13.5 feet tall without needing special permits to take it and without having restrictions about like going under bridges and shit like that.
13.5 feet tall. That's plenty tall to make a little loft or something.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. So we'll have like a full size downstairs and then two loft areas for the kids and an office space.
That square footage is awesome for where you guys are at, that they don't require permitting up to that. In California, you have to permit anything that's over a 10 by 10 in square footage. You're only allowed to have 100 square feet. It has to be underneath that by an inch to not have to have it permitted. And then they have a bylaw that if it's not permitted, it can't be stationary. And you're not allowed to live there more than 30 days out of the year.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I think they make it tough to live in them, too.
They do. They don't want you off the grid.
I think Washington and Oregon are both states that are pretty on board with it, like legality-wise.
And then like, you go to Kentucky and they're like, do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And so I think a lot of the things that we build will probably end up east of where we're at right now. And that's why we're trying so hard. You know, we could have built like a 34 footer and had more room. But our plan with this one is to kind of like live in it for 6 months and decide how we could do it better. And then build another one and sell the first one. And so we wanted to make sure that we stay, I think most states, like 48 states, you can be 53 or 54 feet long with the tow vehicle. And so you get any longer than 30 feet and you're starting to really kind of touch on the edge of that length restriction, which could potentially harm resale value. We want it to be able to be used basically anywhere.
Not to mention,
the cops leave you alone. You don't need to give them a reason to give you trouble over anything. They have enough of that.
Right. Well, exactly. And my whole deal with law enforcement is to just like minimize interactions altogether. Exactly. You know, I just not have a conversation, whether I was in the right or the wrong.
I just the radar.
Well, and once you get up to a certain level too, considering that these would be houses, like you said, that end up back east, you get too big. The shipping for an oversized load is a whole hell of a lot more than anything that's under that.
Well, we'll probably have to deliver it realistically.
Oh, okay. So that would actually probably save you money as long as you had like the right thing that they're requiring for you to transport it that far then, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. And everything we're building is towable, 100% mobile. So like if somebody in Arkansas wants to buy my trailer, I'll just drive it out there. I mean, if I got to drive to Arkansas to make 130 grand, you know, and I charge him for delivery, then I'll do that twice a year if that's what I need.
Yeah, after gas prices, you'll make at least 5 grand off that deal.
Right.
Well, after the Joe's question about you guys combining forces professionally, my first thought was, you know, after you said a couple of practice houses, my first thought was, well, then you can build her a wellness center or a bunch of tiny houses that breeze way together with a fire pit in the middle. And there you go.
Well, the idea is to
get our commune. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. The idea is to get property.
Yeah. We want to get property. And then we want to have like different areas that maybe we can like rent out, or we can have like a place where we can do things like that. So it'd be kind of cool.
That's awesome. So it's funny because what Ben was talking about was the restrictions in California on what you can build. I've heard a lot of people get around it. It's expensive, but you basically build down. So underground, as long as it's 10 by 10 still.
Oh. And then you have
the 10 by 10 structure on top, which is like the entrance to your actual house. I don't know what the legalities are on that anymore, but I've heard a lot of people that's their plan is to make an underground, because then you have a bunker too. And it doesn't look like much from the top. It looks like a shed. The problem with that is you still got to pay property tax on your property. So they still get you, you know, it's not never going to be 100% off.
Well,
as far as our stuff is concerned too, it's all temporary structure because it's not going to be mounted on anything. And so as long as it's on wheels, it doesn't really, there's laws about living in a temporary structure, right, in California. But you can also get around that. You have to move it every,
so often.
You know, every 28 days or whatever. And if you have big enough property, you can just move that sucker around the property.
Well, what I heard one person do that walked into the solar shop I worked at, they built 12 two-story 10 by 9. So basically a bottom floor and a top floor per building. And they built 12 of them with non-permanent connecting like breezeways. Mm-hmm. And they were like, so here's the thing. It doesn't have a permanent foundation. It's under 10 by 10. So I don't have to have a permit. But legally, I'm only allowed to stay in them for 30 days. So they would basically just every 30 days go to the next building so that they never actually had to leave their property.
Yeah.
Every every house had something different in it, but it was up to code where it had electricity and running water, and that was all they asked for. Mm-hmm. So he was like, yeah, so I'm going to go sleep in my kitchen for 30 days. It's not like they're going to check on me. And as long as on the blueprints, you say I have 12 non-permanent under 10 by 10 residences for 30 days, one per month, they can't do shit about it.
And you can have a fence around your property. You get some barbed wire, maybe an electrical fence or something, you know, keep people the fuck away from it.
I'm trying to get somewhere where nobody's going to give a shit. You know what I mean? And like to fight me, you have to be able to see me. And it's real easy to put some fence in, and what I'm doing back there is whatever I'm doing back there. The only person that really needs to get onto my property is whoever's going to run my septic tank, because we're going to be set up with, we won't need electric. We won't need water. I'm going to try to buy a property with a creek. So like really the only thing we need is somewhere to deal with black water, unless we decide to do a compost toilet, which is very viable too. So really we don't even need that, you know? So the idea is to just kind of get lost somewhere that's far enough out of town where we don't have to interact with anybody, and close enough to town where I can get to where I need to work and make money, which right now I'm kind of married to the Portland area, unfortunately. But like the idea why that tiny home idea is so appealing is if like I can do that from anywhere, you know? So we get some property couple hours out of town, and I'm all set up cordless, so it's like charge the batteries with the generator while it's on, and then I can work with or without power.
Well, hell, if you really wanted to, like wherever the places that you're living now, you can always buy all of the stuff for a new one deconstructed. Mm-hmm. Literally, you know, if you're selling two of these homes a month, you're saving up money, or a year, you're saving up the money, you're doing all that stuff, year or two later you'd be like, all right, so I have all this stuff I need for our new tiny house. Let's throw it on the flatbed and we're going to drive to this state. We just bought property and we're going to set it up there in a week.
Yeah.
Your move is done.
It just feels like mobile freedom. Because then you can get out of Portland and get somewhere less fucking weird.
Well, that's the idea.
Yeah.
I didn't like the idea of buying a home anywhere. I don't want to go $500,000 in debt to be stuck somewhere that I may not want to be in 3 years, you know? And
yeah, the housing market now is just crazy. It's just nuts. Like, it's the homes aren't going to be worth that much, you know, in even like a couple years. So it's
right.
We're like, what's the point of buying a house that's going to cost us like $500,000? And in a few years, it's going to be worth like $200,000-$300,000. It's like, we're going to lose a lot of money, you know? So.
Well, I think we can all agree that good things aren't happening with the market right now.
No, it's all looking pretty bad. But yeah, that the other cool thing about being mobile is if shit goes even mildly sideways, you could probably just drive off into some trees somewhere, you know, way off the main road, and set up shop there. Find a little creek, get a water filter. I mean, it's like camping, but way cooler, and nobody knows where you're at.
It's like camping, but with a camouflage net.
I just like the idea of being able, like the whole idea for me is to be able to do what I want when I want to do it. And that just feels like a really good way to kind of ensure that if things change where we're at and we want to go somewhere else, then we'll go. And like you said, it's like you find some road to post up on for a while if we needed to. And if somebody gives us a hard time, then we can move it a quarter mile and post up there. You know, it's total freedom.
Outside. Yep.
Yeah, and we're in a nice house. Like I can build a nicer tiny house than any home I could ever afford to put myself in.
And it's not worth it anyway, because a bigger house just means more cost to heat and cool.
Yeah,
and
there's more upkeep and there's more stuff. Yeah, you don't need that much space.
Yeah,
you
know, even a tiny house might take like 2 minutes. That's all you'd have to clean is a counter this big.
Yeah.
Yeah. 20-minute cleanup. Whole house is done. Next task.
That's the thing that people, you know, you don't realize how little you actually need to survive. When people are talking about, you know, amenities and convenience and stuff like that, it's like, yeah, having a huge kitchen is awesome. You have all the space for all the things. You can do all the cooking. And then the cleanup is a fucking bitch. Mm-hmm. So it's like when you have a smaller counter, just for that example, yeah, you may not have all the room, but cleanup takes 2 minutes and then you're done and you can sit down as a fat fuck and be like, okay, time for a nap. We're done.
Unless you're super white rich and you can have a maid that comes in, you know, does that shit for you.
Well, and I think the first time that you guys had me on, we talked about like energetic exchange, and I kind of broke down why gold is valuable the way that it is. And just realizing things like that made me understand that like I had to start thinking about what, how much energy I was willing to part with and what I was getting for that energy that I was parting with. Right. And started thinking
about,
you
talked about the currency exchange of your energy being put into something and getting back, like, for instance, them growing produce and you saying, hey, you know, why don't you give me this many pounds of vegetables a month for the next year and I'll do your roof for you. 3 days right. of work. And there you go. You got a year's worth of food exactly. in one area.
And it also made me start thinking about, like, wants as opposed to needs, right? Like, I was taught mm-hmm. to want this big ass house and a big ass truck that was brand new and all these things. But, like, what I had to part with to have those things didn't seem to make sense to me, you know? And, like, I was, before I met her, I was, like, seriously considering moving into a 10 by 10 shed off grid and starting there, because what I needed was a dry place to sleep, right? Where the animals couldn't get to me and I needed to be able to do whatever I wanted to do. And in that situation, I could have those two things. Those were my top two priorities, you know? And so it just kind of changed the way that I thought about things. And I don't need a whole lot of room. I don't need a brand new truck. I need a place where I can keep myself and the people that I care for comfortable, and be able to create abundance to continue that way of life, right? And I can do that from anywhere. I can do that in 240 square feet or whatever a tiny home is, and I can do it comfortably, and I can do it without a huge overhead, to where when I do make money, I can spend that money on things that I want to do as far as bigger ideas like property, or creating change in people outside of myself. And so it felt like the right call. It really did.
Yeah, I love it. I've had a plan, not really a plan, more of a lofty idea that when I retire, I will sell all my shit, get a trailer or a motorhome. Motorhome probably doesn't make as much sense because I want to detach from it if I want. But yeah, and just literally drive and just go somewhere. Of course, you still need money because you need gas and all that shit.
Yeah.
But,
right.
No, all that bullshit stuff you have to survive. But yeah.
Well, if you get that cost of living down, it opens up a lot of doors.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. No, yeah, I don't want to get retired to do that, though. You know, I want to
do it exactly
now.
What are you saying?
I want to be able to experience as much of life as possible. And I feel like when you're tied down to so much stuff, because we're conditioned to want stuff, right? Like growing up, like I always thought I wanted to live in a big house and I wanted to drive like an Audi, you know, and like fancy cars and stuff. And like, as I got older, I'm like, but why? Like, why do I feel like I want that? And then I actually asked myself, I'm like, okay, what is it that I actually want versus like, what is it that I'm programmed to want? And so like digging deeper, I kind of was like, I don't think I want all of that stuff. Like, I want to just be able to experience things. Like, I want to travel and I want to go visit other countries and spend a lot of time in nature in the woods and make art and do all the fucking fun shit that my soul wants to do instead of all the things that, you know, I think I should do.
Programmed.
I think that's programmed into us on purpose to prevent us from being the best selves we could be. Like,
yeah,
if we knew how powerful we were and all the amazing things we could do, the world would be a very different place. So there's mm-hmm. things like the media and commercials and magazines that tell you what you should look like and what you should buy and what you yeah. should want. And the
education system.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just teaches you, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? Yeah. No one ever, and you have to be like a doctor or a lawyer or no one's like, you know what I used to say to that question? I used to say, I don't know, I just want to live in New Mexico somewhere and live in a trailer and work in a diner and say, hey, hon, you want the usual for the rest of my life and just be fucking happy in a simple existence. Yep. And my parents were like, wow, way to set your sights high, honey. But I just wanted to live a simple life and have fun. That is yeah. not what happened. But that's how I was when I was little. I didn't want to be a fucking doctor. I just like, no. That doesn't yeah. sound
what do you want to be
like,
when you grow up?
I don't want a hermit. Huge house. I didn't want any of that shit.
My answer was, why do I have to grow up? I'm like, oh,
right? Okay. Yeah.
Growing up for squares.
Speaking of growing up, that's for bootstrappers. Sorry, buddy.
Oh, no. We love him, though. It's all good. Thanks for listening, bud. But no, someday I would love to just travel and turn our house into like an Airbnb or something and just let yeah. people stay here or whatever.
Well,
and give it to our kids or something. I don't care, but just go somewhere else or not ever like stay in one place, I guess. Move yeah. around, whatever, just like you guys want to do.
Yeah, be a gypsy. We'll start a gypsy yeah. group, like a caravan, and just start going through New Mexico. Yeah. Do a little meth on the weekends, you know? I mean, no, I hear that's no, what no, they no. do down there.
We don't yeah, have to do
there's a lot we can learn from that kind of lifestyle, man. Like, I had a really, really crazy awakening experience when I was at the mountain, because there are families up there that live all year long off grid, you know? And I was taught my whole life, like the two things that you really needed was like a job and a house, right? Like those were the two staples that you had to have a good life. And I went somewhere.
American where there was dream.
I went somewhere where there was no jobs and no houses, and there was more love and more gratitude in that environment than anywhere I'd ever been in my whole life. And it just kind of made me realize I was doing it wrong.
It's been proven over and over again where you go to indigenous tribes and things of that nature where they don't even grow crops. They just live off of literally whatever grows in the jungle, and they talk about their dreams, and then they take a shit and they go to bed. Maybe dance in between there. And it's like, they're happier than fuck, dude. They don't have a written language. They just know how to talk to each other. They know how to talk without talking, which is bizarre.
You know what their advantage is that they don't even realize or know a lot of the, you know, contemporary amenities that we have. So they don't know what they're missing.
They're not making a list all day in their head. I need to go to this place. I need to get milk. I need to go to work. I need to pick up this before I go home. And then I got to go to bed early. I need to set my alarm.
PTA conference.
The monks that grocery store mentality.
Grocery store mentality.
I need to go here. I need to buy this stuff. Right.
It's like you end up finding, and it's been proven over and over again, the people that usually have the least, meaning the least material or economic gains, are usually the happiest, because those two things weigh the heaviest on people that are programmed to think that's what you need. Is that if your program is that you need all of this, then what weighs on your conscience is the lack of it. And so now you're stressed all the time because you don't have what you were told you need to survive. When all of that goes away and you realize all you need is, well, to eat some, drink some, and sleep, it's not hard to exist, and you're going to be happy if you have the three things that you actually need to survive.
And you're living in the moment.
I mean, and then on top of that too, that's like physical needs, but humans also need, like, they have emotional needs too, right? Where it's like having a regulated nervous system, which in this society we're programmed to be dysregulated all the fucking time.
Anxious, like, all the time.
So anxious, so fearful, so on edge all the time, you know, and we're always in a hurry, and nothing dysregulates your system more than hurrying. And so when you learn to like slow down and slow down your pace, and that's one of the things that I'm implementing now, is just learning to slow the fuck down, because I was just dysregulated all the time and just always snappy or on edge or, you know, whatever. And so I was like, I need to like find a way to cut that shit out. And so slowing down has been a huge, huge thing.
Like Ben was saying, the people with the least amount of shit seem the happiest. I lived kind of off and on the streets, basically, when I was a teenager. I knew a lot of bums. They were the happiest motherfuckers you'll ever meet, and they didn't have shit. They had a backpack with stinky whatever was in there that they walked around with all day. Probably hadn't showered in a week. They didn't give a fuck.
There's no overhead.
Talking about the mentally ill ones either. That was a different story. But no, these were people that were all there in their head, and they're just like, I just unplugged from the system.
They're like, those are the ones people call
crazy. They're starting to look like the most sane people in the world right now. They're like, I can go do whatever I want. I'm not tied down anymore. I can just take off.
And you'll remember this too, because when we were kids and teenagers, we were young, we would walk up and we realized they were the most giving of all the people. If we walked up and asked them for a cigarette, one, they usually had all of the different kinds. They would be like, well, do you want a menthol? Do you want an all natural? Do you want a Marlboro? Like, they could just.
They were all halfies. They were all reprints.
But they would open up these packs and, you know, oh, take a couple for the road. It's no big deal. Like, they didn't care who you were. They didn't care if they could tell you were judging them or whatever. They didn't care. They were like, I mean, I got nowhere to be. You want? Yeah, go for it. Fucking, I don't care. This was given to us, so pay it forward. Like, that was always kind of their mentality.
The nicest people, they're nicer bums than people that live in huge houses. Oh shit, sorry.
My bad.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying, living in scarcity by a model of abundance. It's crazy how that works. You know, we see them as having nothing, and it's like a struggle to survive every day. But they understand that like more shit's gonna come around, and so why not just keep it moving?
And they don't worry about it.
And before whatever you want to call the last couple of years, like, homelessness was a different situation. I would say like half of the people that were homeless by choice, because they just didn't want to be a part of the system. You know, I met dudes that quit like really good jobs because they just thought it was bullshit and they wanted to do whatever they wanted to do. And so it was like that's weighing your priorities. You know, people, we have these problems where it's like, do I want to buy this car? Or do I want to buy this car? And we see that as something that's like just been a whole bunch of time, you know, deciphering or whatever, where like a life like that, it's just like, what do I need right now? And that's what makes you happy, is just your ability to exist and do the things that you want to do. And it's a pretty special realization to realize that, well, it's hard at first, because then you realize that everything you've ever been taught was totally bullshit and was used to program you and control you and make you unhappy, because unhappy people are profitable. And unhealthy people
more.
Unhappy people are weak too. They're spiritually weak. Like, they can't create and like put that love out into the universe. That there's something that's definitely trying to stifle that in the world. And like you were saying, Taylor, too, like time, I think, was just created to stress us the fuck out, like to keep us somewhere. Okay, what time is it? Okay, we have to do this by this time. We only have this much time. And just that is a constant stressor on people when you just live outside of that, which I can't do. We all can't. I mean, well, we can try.
It all seems so obviously by design too. And it doesn't have to be reptilian overlords, although it might be. But it's just at the base level, it's just profit, you know, the profit model. That's all it is.
It doesn't even have to be evil. Like, I don't know if it's necessarily evil. I just think it's there to keep us from being the best we can be, so that we can learn how to be the best we can be. It doesn't have to be this dark elite group that's doing it.
But it probably is.
Like, I don't know. It doesn't have to be that negative. I don't know.
Well, in the context of the human experience, it's kind of necessity. I mean, esoterically or spiritually, like, that's kind of an earth thing, right? Like, time doesn't exist outside of whatever this realm or this experience is. That's like a here and a now thing that is just part of Earth school.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny, because time is like one of the things of like the earthly realm that I have the most trouble with. Like, I always, like, I don't know. He always has to make sure I'm on time to shit. And I'm just... like, time's not real. He's like, yes, it is. We have an appointment. Let's go.
No, yeah, it's real here. Like, there's something about this stuff that's here that we have to still kind of, we have to play along, but we can still be our best selves while we're doing it, you know?
Well, right. And I think that you get to a point where, like, it's like wants, right? Like, I don't have to be on time. I'm on time because I choose to be, because I want to be, because I'm doing what I want to do, right? Mm-hmm. And if I don't want to do, like, anything that is going to create any kind of sense of obligation, like, I'm out. I don't do that anymore. My bag of fucks has been empty for too long. And so it's like, if I'm supposed to be somewhere, it's because I've agreed to be there. And if I've agreed to be there, it's because I want to be there. Right. And so it feels good to be on time to something like that. But like, as far as organization and structure, like, I try to have as little of that shit as possible in my life. Like, things are going to happen as they're supposed to, and things take as long as they take. And if I don't fucking feel like doing something today, then I'll do it when I feel like it, you know, and I'll do something else that's productive or that's going to fucking feed my soul, whether it's spiritually or energetically, or I'll rest, you know, which is something that I'm really having to learn how to do. Cause like, on one hand, it's like, there's always something that needs to fucking happen. And,
you'll never stop. There's always something to be doing.
Rest is a new one for him.
Right.
he didn't rest until we met.
Get shit done is kind of the mode that I'm stuck in. If it's not work, it's something else. But I have a hard time just, part of it's the ADHD and part of it's this, I think inherent need for self-validation, maybe. I don't know.
Well,
maybe
it's not just that. I mentioned this the last time we were over at Joe and Jen's. I think it was the last weekend. And her and I have talked about it. It was the idea that we're, for the most part, not saying there aren't other countries out there, but we are largely ahead in this idea that you have to constantly be productive. Mm-hmm. That rest is for the weak. You always should be productive. Everybody wears their badge of, I worked 60, 70 hours this week. And there was a gentleman that was in the Royal Marines in Britain. And after he got out, he moved to the United States. And he was saying, he goes, I really don't get why Americans are so overly driven to the point of ruining their bodies because they aren't eating correctly. They're getting fast food because, again, they only have a half hour lunch and they're pulling a 12 hour day. So then they buy something on the way home. They're drinking energy drinks and then they can't sleep, but it doesn't matter because they're only getting 4 hours of sleep anyway before they work another 12. And it's like this constant thing. Now, in the idea of what you said about ADHD and always needing to do that, that's how I feel a lot of the time. Like, when I stop drinking, for about 6 months, I would get maybe 3-4 hours of sleep, weeks and weeks on end, and then my body would crash for 16 hours. And I didn't know what I was going to do about it because I had horrible insomnia. I didn't even realize I was using alcohol to get me to sleep. I just thought it was something that I did at night because I wanted to and because I liked it. And then I'd pass the fuck out and sleep until the morning. And when I started taking the little THC gummies, which I don't really like being high, I only do it because it makes me go to bed and I have to be up at 4:45 for my job. So it's like, what is the point though of working 60 hours a week to make the most amount of money you can get when you're minimizing the amount of time that you should be spending with the people that you're working for? That meaning the people you care about, your family, your kids, all of it. You're minimizing the time with them to make more money that you don't have time to spend on them.
That's
or
it.
Anything else. You're losing time and money, the very thing that you're putting so much into somewhere else. And Americans are widely known for this. They pride themselves on the amount that they work and how hardworking they are and their work ethic. And I'm not saying any one of those things is bad. I'm just saying that as a general rule of life, as a existence, you shouldn't keep that up.
Right.
You need to spend holidays. You need to take that vacation time and it needs to be stress-free and you need to get that sleep and shit. Like, otherwise you're just going to end up, you know, under 50, under 40, ready to have a heart attack because
it's not a quality of life.
Yeah. It's not a quality of life at all.
Why do you think caffeine's been not only legal, but so fucking prevalent and pushed? Because it's productive. Yeah. Have that morning coffee, go do your best at your job, work long hours, and then, you know, have a beer when you get home, go to sleep. But
cocaine's illegal because it makes you happy and you can go to sleep afterwards.
Yeah.
You know? And something I learned when I got sober, there's a huge difference between passing out and going to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I had to teach myself to go to sleep. And for a long time, I used weed to sleep, right? And then that's something that I don't even have in my life right now. And don't get me wrong, I think cannabis is a very, very powerful and it's a incredibly helpful medicine for certain people. I was at a point in my life right now where I get like weird hangovers and shit. I just prefer to be clear-headed. But learning to lay down and like be able to sit with yourself and, you know, kind of process the day and then allow yourself to go to sleep and kind of finding that sense of peace to be able to let that happen was a very difficult thing for me. Going to sleep is hard enough, but then staying asleep, right? You wake up and you got to pee or something, going through this whole process over and over again. And I'm finally there where I can sleep, you know, a solid 8-10 hours sometimes. But it sounds silly to say that you have to practice sleeping, but it is something that's really hard for me.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
weird.
Joe and I are learning the same thing.
It's such a different thing than, you know, having a few beers and going to bed. That you're out the moment your head hits the pillow. If you're not doing that, because we don't drink during the week anymore. So during the week, we had to learn this. Oh, I lay here for about a half hour and I see weird shit because I'm in this like hypnagogic state, you know, and then all this, I can almost pinpoint the moment I go to sleep now. And then I'm fucking out for 8 hours.
And we found that when we woke up in the morning, I was exhausted.
Yeah.
Like so tired. Like if I went to bed drinking, I'd wake up after 8 hours, zing, as soon as the alcohol wore off, I was wide awake and good because we drank for so long every day. Yeah. And we weren't drinking to get drunk or get wasted or whatever. We would just get this buzz, but it went on for years and years. So just eliminating that, my body was like, can we just sleep a little bit more without anything in our system? It was so excited. Did you find that too, Jeff? Sleep. Like when you woke up, you were a little more tired in the beginning?
Yeah. And I kind of figured, honestly, that was more about not finding my REM cycle like I was when I was conditioned with alcohol, because your body like figures out how to overcome whatever you're putting it through, right? Like, which is why alcohol will kill you. If you drink a certain amount and you stop taking it altogether, it's literally going to kill you because your body has learned to produce this shit to overcome this heavy depressant that you've been taking in. It's like this natural stimulant that your body is producing to constantly get you to be able to function. and then you stop, and it's like your body is going to keep producing this because that's what you've taught it to do, but you don't have the depressant anymore, and so it's going to create seizures and all kinds of other stuff. And so I think it's what, for me, it was kind of like that in the sleep cycle as well. But I ended up kind of turning bedtime into a meditation. Like I realized that was like one of the either right when you wake up or right when you go to sleep are some of the best times that you can meditate, because you're still really close to that dream state. So you're not all the way in or out of your body. And so just setting some time aside at night, and it's still something that I do. Like when I lay down, I kind of give myself freedom to bounce around in my head. And that's like the one time a day where it's okay to just kind of try to follow wherever my brain wants to go and just see what comes up. And
so weird shit comes up too. If you just it's like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. We've been like recording our hypnagogic states, like talking about it the next day, and then talking about our dreams and trying to find the moment of dream, because I can tell when I'm just kind of thinking of weird shit.
Well, it's funny.
And then all of a sudden you're dreaming, like, and then it's like,
once you realize you're dreaming, I'll be like, what? And like jerk awake. And she's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Right when I'm going to sleep, I'll fucking.
Yeah.
She does it all the time. Yeah. I'll be falling asleep and we'll be cuddling, and all of a sudden, like, I'll have just gotten asleep and he fucking twitches. I'm like, God damn it.
That happens to me too, Taylor. I get it.
She hits me in the middle of the night, though. She'll swing her arm over and smack me in the face.
I do.
Probably snoring.
She's like, I do.
You're probably snoring. She's just telling you to shut the fuck up.
No, if I'm snoring, she literally goes like this and is like, hey.
No, that's not true. I don't shake him. He used to hold his breath in his sleep when we were having fun.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he would snore and he'd go. And I was like, Jesus Christ,
nudge him, like, breathe.
I've had to stay awake for hours and hours before. Like, there were times where I would stay awake for 2 or 3 hours, making sure that he didn't die before he fell asleep.
Or before he woke up. For a long period of time when I drank too, and a little bit when I was smoking weed too. And I had to like learn to dream again when I quit smoking weed. It was really weird. I didn't dream for several years.
That would be nice.
I don't dream at all.
Dude, I've heard that a lot.
Do you take THC to go to sleep, though?
What's that?
Do you take THC to go to sleep?
Yeah, that 6 months that I had off, basically completely free. I hadn't been into weed for years, like over a decade. And when I stopped drinking, I didn't have a lot of the withdrawals and stuff. I know everybody's propensity, both biologically as well as how much they drink, not just for them, but in general, has a huge deal to do with your withdrawal symptoms. Mine was all mental. Mine was the habitual part of my day of drinking and then crashing. And after I stopped drinking, I didn't have any of the physical withdrawals. I wasn't getting the shakes. My blood sugar definitely dropped. And so then I wanted sweets a lot. But I didn't have like any aches and pains, hallucinations. I wasn't like freaking out. None of my body was failing. It was just a mental thing for me. And during that time, I actually got this close to completely being over nicotine. And then that started back up. And, that's harder for me than drinking has ever been. And, in that 6 months,
you're sober, cause you, that's all you have.
In that 6 months, I think I could have learned. But because of the volatile state that my personal life was in, and I remember telling several people, I want to not drink at all during this, because whatever's coming, whatever the storm is I'm going through, one, I want to face it clear-headed, and two, when it's over with and things get better, I'll be thankful that I didn't make it worse, and that I remember all of it, and that I didn't, you know, I made the best decisions I could, completely clear-headed without any kind of things. But there was a flight or fight response that goes on in that kind of a situation. I lost 30 pounds in a month, and I'm not a big dude. I didn't have a lot to lose, but my metabolism at 28 had slowed just enough that being a stay-at-home dad and not being as physically active, I was actually for the first time in my life capable of gaining weight. And I got up to 170 and I loved it. I was looking thick. I looked healthy, but I wasn't healthy. And as soon as all this started hitting, and I stopped drinking, I'm now in a depression. I'm anxious in that fight or flight mode constantly. I dropped 30 pounds in a month. I couldn't sleep for shit. And so I think in that 6 months, if I were to try it again, getting off the THC, I could get back into that full, completely sober sleep. I guess it's not a risk I'm willing to take right now with my job, only because I know that I'm going to be up till 2 and got to be up at 4:45, and I can't do that for very long or power through. I don't do well with sleep deprivation. And so when it comes to the dreaming, though, even when as a kid, when I wasn't on anything, I hadn't started drinking yet, I hadn't smoked at all, I just never dream. Like sober, when I've learned how to sleep sober, I've never really dreamed. It's once in a very blue moon that I'll have a dream that I actually remember or that I could pull out. And they're usually very realistic. They don't go off the deep end very often. And the things that are kind of weird, you know, you justify in your dream like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, that's normal. I fucking see that in my normal life. Yank. But then when you wake up, you're like, oh, okay, that's, I don't know if there's something to that or not. And I've thought about trying. I've tried different things. Valerian root was one that I tried to kind of help as a all natural medicine to try to help me sleep. That didn't.
Have you tried mugwort? Like a mugwort tincture?
I don't even know if I know how to pronounce that right after you said it. So no.
Mugwort is really good. It helps produce like more lucid dreams. So it might actually, it might not have that effect on you, but it might help you kind of get more memory from your dreams.
Oh yeah, because you're almost certainly dreaming.
Yeah,
like, you're almost recalling.
Yeah, and
I know neurologically you dream basically all night.
Yeah,
and it's sometimes thousands of dreams, you know, in succession that you just don't ever remember.
And one of the things too, like a lot of times when you don't remember your dreams, it's because you're doing a lot of like the inner work in the dream state, and some of it's very intense, so your brain kind of just blocks it out.
What do you mean inner work?
Kind of just like processing stuff, like processing like emotional stuff, or you know,
that's
things
why
of that nature. And so you're processing like a lot of like emotions that have either been like stuffed down or repressed that are too much to do in your waking life, and so you're doing it in the dream state. And so a lot of times if you're not finished or if you have a lot of work to do, your memory will block it out because it's not something that you have to necessarily have recollection of. It's more of like a just like a something your body has to process on its own.
You're clocking out for that night until the next time it has the ability to.
What's the mugwort tincture, Taylor? How do you make that? Because I think we have mugwort, so Ben, you can come and grab it, and Taylor can tell us what you
got. Yeah, bring me back your one keystone from last night that was here.
So for mugwort, I'm not 100% sure. You can make a tincture usually out of like with either alcohol, or you can do
lime juice works.
Really? Or you can use like an almond oil or something like that. But I can send you like a link or something on like how to make
You just make tea out of that shit too, right? Because I've made
You can actually do like a tea. You can make a tea out of it too if you don't want to make a tincture.
Well, and melatonin, everybody talks about melatonin, but I've read a lot about microdosing melatonin. So they would tell you that an average dose is like 3 to 5 milligrams of melatonin, but you get a lot better results with a lot less of the negative side effects on something like 0.3 milligrams, right? Like this teeny tiny dose. And what that's doing is kickstarting your body's ability to produce melatonin as opposed to producing melatonin for your body. So something to consider is like incredibly light doses, just enough to get your body going, okay, this is what melatonin, this is, you know, and start that, stimulate that melatonin producing product or process. And the dream state is really strange. And for me, I had to kind of learn not to try to use it every night because my brain, I guess these are like compared to like a computer, right? So I would take in these massive amounts of information during the day that basically weren't usable at that point in time. Like I couldn't sit there and tell you what I had read about or anything. I mean, I would read just stupid amounts of information and I couldn't do anything with it until I had slept on it, right? And so I would go to sleep, and I saw that as like during the day I was like downloading, right? And then nighttime was when I was installing whatever I download, right? You can have something on your hard drive, but you can't use it until it's installed. And so I would kind of, whether it was the crystals that I was working with, I had this big dream altar set up with mainly different types of quartz. But anyways, I was like taking these things to the dream state and trying to process it there. And a big part of that for me was that the vessel, right? Like the meat suit is very limited, right? You have limits in your brain where spiritually you are essentially limitless, right? And so you have only so much processing power, only so much computing power while you're in your physical body. Now, when you're dreaming, you can make the argument that you're not in that physical body, right? And so all of the rules of the meat suit go out the window. And so if you're taking this information in and just kind of holding it there, right, and trying to retain it and then taking that to a dream state and processing it there, you can reintegrate that information in a usable way, right, and kind of use the dream state to facilitate that transfer, and which is great, right? But then if that's what you're doing every night and dream work is where you live, then you're not allowing yourself to just dream, right? Which dreams are very significant, and we dream for a reason, and trying to retain and recall and document dreams isn't really doable when you're taking up all of your dream space to try to use it for work, if that makes sense.
Well,
so like finding balance there.
What you were saying about melatonin, I remembered that I actually still have, I haven't used this in over a year, but I got this shit. It's called Sleep 3 Stress Support. This is what it looks like. And the reason why it's three is because this is what the pills look like. There are three different layers.
Oh, right. Wow.
So probably and rapid release and then time release.
Yep. And it is each one. There's four right here. Each one is 10 milligrams of melatonin. And the dosage on the back was for 2 to 3.
That's ridiculous.
20 to 30 milligrams of melatonin.
It'll give you a gnarly hangover too, doesn't it? Melatonin.
Dude,
it,
yeah.
Groggy the whole next day.
Mm-hmm. That was the thing, is that I started realizing that the rapid release honestly just kind of put me in almost like what Kratom already does, which is what I've been taking for almost 9 years. And it helped me greatly stop drinking. I actually attribute a lot of the lack of withdrawals to the fact that I was getting a shitload of water because of the way that I drink it. It would ease some of the aches and pains, and it helped me a lot with the depression that was going on at the time. But I started realizing that it's each layer is 5 milligrams, essentially. It's 5 milligrams of fast release melatonin, 5 milligrams of regular melatonin, which is the white center. And then the darker green is a kind of root. The bottom layer of green, which is why it's not showing up on my camera, is the fast relief. Well, I noticed that the fast relief, it put me into kind of not disoriented, but it put me into one of those states where you feel like you've been up for too long, even if you haven't been. It's kind of one of those heady, spacey, kind of cloudy, but I didn't feel tired. Mentally, I didn't feel tired. Physically, I didn't feel tired. And I could have been up for, 24 hours at that point. So when I finally did fall asleep and all of the later stuff, the 15 to 20 milligrams of the regular melatonin actually kicked in. Not only did I wake up feeling not ready for the day, I would wake up so late. I would sleep 8-10 hours and I felt like shit until the next night. So now I've drawn my sleep into way later in the morning. Now I'm trying to go to bed at a decent hour the next night, and I've had only 12 hours of being awake. So now what am I doing? I'm taking another 3 to try to get me to go to sleep at a decent hour. And the fucking, it just fucking goes and goes until I finally just said, you know what? She even mentioned it. She's like, I don't think you should be taking that much. And I'm like, oh, that's what it says in the box. Thanks.
It's what the camera, big pharma.
Yeah. I don't want to take it again. That's why these have been sitting there for a year. Honestly, I don't know why I still have them. But our friend Seth, he tried to take melatonin while he was quitting drinking, and he had a severe reaction. He was taking like a 2, even 4 milligram. And he said that not only did it make him sleep through his alarm, he would sleep for like 10, 12 hours. He couldn't get awake during his dreams. It caused really vivid, really weird off-the-wall dreams for him, which also could have been mixed with the fact that he wasn't drinking anymore. And the whole thing together is he's like, I don't ever want to experience a night like that ever again. He was like,
I like dream paralysis.
He said it was absolutely awful. And when he woke up, he felt like worse shit than when he was drinking. So he just went back to drinking.
Yeah. That's nuts.
Try microdosing, or don't, but it's like everything that I've read, like the average dose of melatonin is like way too heavy for what your body actually wants. And
yeah,
like,
that's what she told me.
During the day, like you were saying, is that 0.0 whatever percent how much it naturally produces. So when mm-hmm. you're doing that overage like that, it just completely screws up your whole system.
Yeah,
right. And for me,
dream paralysis happens to me often. And then if back in the day when I would take melatonin because I have really bad insomnia, it would just fuck me off the entire morning. And when I wake up in this panic state and it will just have me in a very weird, bizarre mood all day long and I can't get rid of it. And just a no-go.
It's one of those things that's, you know, natural, but can also really throw things off if it's not regulated.
Mm-hmm.
Too much of anything's a bad thing. If your body's like,
right,
that much melatonin and all of a sudden you're like, here's some synthetic melatonin, your body's like, fuck, it's too much, bro. Well, you guys, I know you got to get out of here and we will honor that. It was great to talk to you guys and hopefully we can meet up again sometime soon and hang out for a full moon or something.
Let
everyone know where they can find you and if or whatever other things you want to say. You guys have the floor.
Me first.
Go ahead.
I appreciate you having us. I still kind of live on Instagram. The name changed. I am now _ Jeffstradamus, JeffStradamus. So reach out.
Yep. And then That's you can find me name. On Instagram as well. There you're good. At Taylor Alina. And then I also have a website if anyone's interested in like shadow work or things like that at lovedbytheuniverse.com.
All right.
Awesome.
Thanks you guys.
Thank you so much.
See you around soon.
All right, make it happen. Let's make it happen. Thanks for having us.
Always.
Good rest of your day.
You too.